The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
And even in politics, Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God. And on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Wow, have another cup of coffee. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. I hope you had a good weekend. It was a colder weekend, was it not? We know where Steve Noble is. I'm right here on the mic in the studio here in Raleigh in my little Star Wars theme studio. And pretty soon, the Uber Star Wars Christmas tree will make its return here to the studio, complete with the Death Star tree topper. That'll be fun when we get that bad boy up and running. So we know where Steve Noble is. I'm right here. Where's Gavin Newsom? Interesting. So the good, the bad, the ugly today. A bunch of stories I want to get through and react to. Thank you to Pastor Chris and Pastor Pepper, who were in here on Friday filling in for me. We took a run out to the mountains in North Carolina with family, and that was a great time. Beautiful. We caught some beautiful fall colors out there along the Blue Ridge Parkway, and it was just an awesome time away. So good to be back here in the studio. So a bunch of different things. But have you heard this kind of Gavin Newsom thing? I've got a bunch of different stories, good, bad, ugly. Boy. And then we'll talk to David Fisher in the fourth segment today, a little Money Monday update. But the last time Gavin Newsom was seen in public was October 27th. Okay, so we're talking about a few weeks ago at this point, 2 weeks ago at this point. October 27th, he missed the UN climate change party, and they said that was for family obligations, he and his wife or his partner, whatever we call them these days. And but the interesting thing about this, the little scratch your chinny chin chin moment, is that the last time Gavin Newsom was seen in public on October 27th, he was getting his Moderna booster. How about that? Isn't that interesting? I don't know that that's going to amount to anything. I'm not implying anything, but it is interesting in the COVID world in which we live and breathe, find our meaning. Not me, baby. My meaning's found in my Savior. Praise God. Okay, so some good stuff, then some bad stuff, then some ugly stuff. Let's start with something good for a change. Just decided to do some news talk today. You know, I'm kind of paying attention to stuff all the time, and certain stories will grab my attention. Then usually I'm like, hey, I want to go talk about this on the air with my friends. And so here we are. Durham, remember him? John Durham? Remember that guy? Knock, knock. Ring a bell. Anybody? John Durham? So special counsel, it's in the Wall Street Journal. Special counsel John Durham. You may have heard this. The latest indictment is an important step in unraveling what really happened in the long tail of false Russia collusion allegations. Remember that? Russian collusion against the 2016 Trump presidential campaign. The facts in the indictment add to the evidence, that this was from the first to last a dirty trick by Hillary Rodham Clinton and her campaign, and that media were its gullible promoters. Gullible? I'd say willing. Jumping on anything they could. Mr. Durham this week indicted Igor Danchenko, a Russian national who worked at the Brookings Institute in Washington and who was their main source for Christopher Steele's dossier claiming Donald Trump was in secret cahoots with Russia, amongst other things. Most notably, the Russian hid the extent that he was working with Democratic public relations executives with ties to Hillary Clinton. This is going to be a great movie one day, but it's not going to show up on Netflix. There's no way. Or Amazon or any of those guys. Press reports have identified the executive as Charles Dolan, a Clinton associate who in 2016 was actively working to make Hillary the president. What a shock. The purpose was to present the FBI with oppo research that masqueraded as intelligence. And it worked. Mrs. Clinton lost the election, however, but the Russian tail sabotaged an incoming president with relentless media assaults. On and on and on it goes. Russian collusion, Adam Schiff, all that stuff. Oh, my goodness. This Durham indictment reads like a story with more to come, but some lessons are already clear. One question is why the country is now learning these facts. Why only now? The Durham indictments treat the FBI as the duped party. They weren't. But the record shows former FBI Director James Comey and his investigators knew from the summer of 2016 that Clinton campaign fingerprints were all over the Russian dossier. The Durham prosecutions also speak poorly of former special counsel Robert Mueller. The media also has a lot to answer for in the Wall Street Journal article. It is in its conformist disdain for Mr. Trump. The Washington Press Corps, with rare exceptions, pursued the Russia collusion story with partisan blinders. No kidding. They gave each other awards for stories that, in retrospect, amounted to nothing or worse, misinformation. We like that word these days. The Washington Post this week offered the first sign of media self-reflection. That would be the first sign in about, I don't know, 50 years. Noting the Durham indictments cast new uncertainty on some past reporting on the dossier by news organizations, including its own, of course. Isn't that funny how they do that? Cast new uncertainty, air quotes, on some past reporting on the dossier by news organizations. Not that we willingly colluded and lied about it, but just some, yeah, maybe some inconsistencies here and there. The great thing about Durham, and let's give some props to Bill Barr, because he gave Durham the status of a special counsel to protect his investigation after the change in administrations. Good job, Bill Barr. That's why John Durham is still going. They can't shut him down. But Biden can still use the Department of Justice to come after people. People like you, people like me, people like James O'Keefe. We'll get to that in a minute. Since I mentioned it, let me jump ahead. Let me find it. This is really disturbing. This would be the good, the bad, the ugly. This is ugly. This should harken back to, you should remember, the Obama administration weaponizing the IRS to go after 501c4 organizations, especially once the Tea Party came out of the ground. So they weaponized the IRS. Remember that? So speaking of James O'Keefe and what the government still wants to do, the Department of Justice has largely been weaponized. You just have to understand that. And who's the who's in their sights? Well, that would be people like me and probably people like you. And that's definitely people like Veritas and James O'Keefe. This is really scary. Okay, listen to this. The FBI raided two addresses in New York on Thursday linked to Project Veritas as part of a probe into the alleged theft of President Biden's daughter's diary, according to the New York Times, which curiously knew about the raid an hour after it happened, according to Veritas founder James O'Keefe. Search warrants were executed in a Midtown Manhattan apartment of longtime Veritas employee Spencer Meads. While Veritas did not publish excerpts of the diary, listen to this, this gets better. Another conservative outlet ran dozens of handwritten pages from it on October 24, 2020, a year ago, in the final days of the U.S. presidential election. The website claimed that they received the documents from a whistleblower at another organization that would not publish the information. According to the report, Project Veritas said it knew the whereabouts of the actual diary and had a recording of Ashley Biden admitting it was hers. And then the plot thickens, which I'll share with you when we come back from the break. But the plot definitely thickens. And the Biden administration, do you think it's possible that they would weaponize the FBI, the Department of Justice, to go after somebody like James O'Keefe and Project Veritas? Well, if they'll do it to go after school board speakers, they'll do it to go after him or you. We'll be right back. Okay, let's play a little game of knock, knock. Knock, knock. Who's there? The FBI. The FBI who? The FBI, and you are in trouble. Why are you in trouble? Because Project Veritas, in this particular story, James O'Keefe, Project Veritas, they do the undercover videos, a bunch of them, and they've been doing a bunch of stuff on COVID and vaccines and stuff, which is good. It's a great organization. So the FBI came knocking the other day because of Veritas allegedly had a copy of Ashley Biden's diary, which was has some explosive, really disturbing, dark stuff in there about the Biden family and her dad. And I mean, it's really messed up. I couldn't believe all the things that Glenn Beck was sharing earlier this morning. I don't know where he got the information, but this was allegedly from it. And according to the report, Project Veritas said it knew the whereabouts of the actual diary and had a recording of Ashley Biden admitting it was hers. But the FBI came a knocking, right? So this is another weaponization of the Department of Justice by liberals, most likely. Late last year, we were approached by tipsters claiming they had a copy of Ashley Biden's diary, said O'Keefe. This is the founder of Project Veritas. Adding, the tipsters indicated that they were negotiating with a different media outlet for the payment of monies for the diary. At the end of the day, we made the ethical decision that because, in part, we could not determine if the diary was real, if the diary in fact belonged to Ashley Biden, or if the contents of the diary occurred, we could not publish the diary in any or any part thereof. So they did absolutely nothing. O'Keefe said that they turned the diary over to law enforcement after Ashley Biden's attorney refused to accept or authenticate it. So they did nothing with it publicly, and then they turned it over to the authorities. This is a while ago, okay? A year ago. The Project Veritas founder, Ed, in a statement, we did not know how the New York Times was aware of the execution of a search warrant at our reporter's home or the subject matter of the search warrant as a grand jury investigation is Secret. That's funny. Secret. No, not when the whole thing is given over. And that's why another reminder for us, hopefully you're a follower of Christ as I am, hopefully just another reminder to pray for those in authority over us from the top to the bottom, because there's just nightmares and dark places all over the place throughout the system, from the federal to the state to the local. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And the system itself is corrupt in so many different ways, it's hard to determine. But they've weaponized the Department of Justice again, so be careful, friends, what you're doing out there. Because you never know when the FBI may come knocking at your door because you've done something to upset somebody on the other side of the political aisle. And by the way, to test our intellectual honesty, especially if you're going to call yourself a Christian, then if it's wrong for a liberal, a Democrat, to use the Department of Justice for political means, it's wrong for a Republican to do it too. Wrong is wrong. You call balls and strikes based on the word of God and the truth of God's word and his moral law, and it doesn't matter who's standing there. It doesn't matter what party they're a part of. You just call balls and strikes based on God's morality, and that's it. That's what you're supposed to do. That's what I'm supposed to do. All right, so let's a little COVID thing here. Here's a good one. Federal appeals court, I mentioned this the other day, blocks Biden's big company vax mandate. So this is ramping up all the time. A federal court issued a temporary victory in a lawsuit against the Biden administration, thank you, Texas, issuing a temporary restraint on that. Okay, shut it down. The Attorney General Ken Paxton from Texas tweeted, "Yesterday I sued the Biden administration over its unlawful OSHA vax mandate. We won. Just this morning, citing grave statutory and constitutional issues, the Fifth Circuit Court stayed the mandate. The fight is not over, and I will never stop resisting this administration's unconstitutional overreach." Good job. Biden's new vaccine mandate on private businesses is a breathtaking abuse of power, Paxton tweeted on Friday. OSHA has only limited power and specific responsibilities. This latest move goes way outside those bounds. This quote-unquote standard is flatly unconstitutional. I'm asking the court to strike it down. The Wall Street Journal reports that the New Orleans-based Fifth Circuit said it would quickly consider whether to issue an injunction against the vaccine and testing requirements, ordering the Biden administration to file initial legal papers by late Monday afternoon, being now. I haven't heard anything yet, so we'll see. A number of trade groups have issued warnings about the mandate, saying that it would exacerbate supply chain bottlenecks and staffing shortages nationwide. This is only going to get worse, friends. A reminder number 47 of why we need to pray for those in authority over us. The White House remains confident the mandate will stand up to legal challenges. We are very confident that it can, White House Deputy Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre said. As for the legal side of this, let me be crystal clear to avoid what appears to be possible misinformation or disinformation around the emergency temporary standard being a vaccine mandate. So now they're playing with the language. Okay, this is like a woman's right to choose or health care, meaning, you know, the destruction of children in the womb. We call that a woman's right to choose. A reproductive health care, reproductive freedom. Just play around with the language. That would be on its face, she said. Incorrect. As has been explicit for months. Listen, here's the double talk. It is a quote-unquote standard for safe workplace to either comply with weekly testing or to be vaccinated. Why would they say that? A standard for safe workplace. Because that's OSHA language. Trying to get a square peg in a round hole. That's why they do that. Following today's Federal Court of Appeals decision, this is the Wall Street Journal. We presume the next stop will be for SCOTUS to decide just how authoritarian the U.S. government can be. Wow. Then there's this. So now our government, Joe Biden et al., headlong Pfizer vaccine, kids 5 to 11. Kids 5 to 11. 5 to 11. Okay, let's start giving them the vaccine. This is from an article via Blue State Conservative. By Pfizer's own admission, there were zero hospitalizations, ICU admissions, or deaths in the treatment or control group in their study of 2,300 children ages 5 to 11. So they found in their own study absolutely no reason to vaccinate these kids. So the number needed to vaccinate in order to prevent a single hospitalization, ICU admission, or death, according to Pfizer's own data, is infinity. Not the good kind of infinity as in God or love or time or the universe. This is the bad kind of infinity, as in you could vaccinate every child age 5 to 11 in the U.S. and not prevent a single hospitalization, ICU admission, or death from coronavirus, according to Pfizer's own clinical trial data as submitted to the FDA. Yet, they got approval to jab 5 to 11-year-olds. The experts have tossed every measure of safety or medical convention in history out the window for this in exchange for laundering tens of billions through pharmaceutical companies that don't want any safety measures slowing down their profit model. That could definitely be true from this article, okay? That's just an opinion. That should scare you more than a virus that had almost no chance of killing you. If that's not enough, remember when the left opposed the right to try legislation, now they oppose the right not to try. If you're not suspicious, you should be. Okay, let me be a spoiler and go to some hard numbers from this. This is from the CDC, Facebook fact checkers. Okay, this isn't misinformation or disinformation. This is holy information to you because this comes from the CDC. So here's the numbers from January 1st, 2020, all the way through mid-September. Okay, just this past September. Population fatality ratios by single year of age. So this is showing deaths with COVID and then the total population based on each individual age and then the deaths with COVID per 100,000. Okay, so if you take 5 through 11 years of age from January of 2020 to September 11th of this year, 2021, okay, year and a half basically, you get a total between 5 and 11-year-olds of 79 deaths with COVID. Doesn't necessarily mean they died of COVID or because COVID, but they died with COVID. 79 deaths out of 28,446,096 children. All 79 deaths, absolutely tragic without a doubt. But 79 out of 28,446,096 is a 0.0000278 chance of death, percent chance of death. How do we end up in a country where the president, his administration, pretty much the entire Democrat Party, and a good chunk of Americans are okay with vaccinating with something that was purely experimental? Vaccinating 5 to 11-year-olds. Because now they got the green light, right? So now they're after it, and you're going to see schools all over the country saying, "Oh, this is like a MMR. You got to get the COVID vaccine." Well, those things actually were deadly. The COVID for children is not nearly as deadly as the flu. But I don't see us going ballistic about the flu, right? Because we're not. But with this one, so we've been first experimental injections of these drugs started in June of 2020. June of 2020 through June of 2021 is 12 months, plus 4 to get us to today, and we're at 16 months. We don't have any more than 16 months worth of long-term, quote-unquote, long-term impact of any of the three vaccines available here in America. We don't have any more than 16 months worth of data, okay? No more than that. So we don't know what this vaccine does to you after 2 years, or 2.5, or 3, or 3.5, or 4, or 5, okay? We don't. Phase 3 trials for most widespread vaccination products, 7 years, 8 years, 9 years. No, not in this case. Okay, so, all right, so I think it's logical to say, yeah, I'm uncomfortable with that. It's just a little too early. Okay, that's one thing. But then, like I was saying before the break, then you look at, okay, well, how dangerous is COVID to children 5 to 11 now that the government has baptized and given their blessing to Pfizer for vaccinating kids 5 to 11? How dangerous is it for them? Well, that's why I was saying, and then we'll move on. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11-year-olds between January 1st, 2020 and September 1st, 2021, okay, a month and a half ago. 79 deaths with COVID. So we don't know whether those are actually from COVID, but we know they died with COVID, and 79 deaths amongst 5 to 11-year-olds. Any 5 to 11-year-old is absolutely tragic. I can't imagine myself having to deal with that. So you go, okay, those are all tragic. Absolutely. No question about it. Weep and mourn with those who mourn, right? Then you got to ask, well, out of how many? Well, the answer to that question is 28,446,096. In America, there are 28,446,096 children between the ages of 5 and 11, of which 79 died with COVID, which means a percentage chance of death of 0.00000, that's 5 zeros after the decimal point, 278. The flu is more dangerous. So why is Biden, Kamala Harris, his entire administration, the entire Democrat Party, from what I can tell, and a good chunk of Americans, probably half of Americans, why are they okay with this? That's totally fear-driven, political-driven, power-driven, money-driven. But I think at the underneath all of it, I think it's power at the top and money at the top with Big Pharma and all that stuff. But you come down out of D.C. and out of Big Pharma boardrooms, and you know what it is? I think it's fear. I think the vast majority of Americans are afraid to die. They're afraid. The fear is their is underlying everything. We, if you're a Christian, have not been given a spirit of fear, but a love, power, and a sound mind. So you look at those numbers and go, okay, I'm not comfortable since I'm the steward, I'm the ward of my children. I'm not comfortable sticking a vaccine inside of them that we really don't know much about other than 16 months worth of data and a fairly new mRNA technology. No, especially when their odds of dying are 0.0000278. 0.50s plus 278. Okay? They got a way better chance of dying from a lightning strike. Way better. Lord, help us, please. Some sanity. I don't know that we're going to get any back before Jesus comes. I don't know. Joe Biden vigorously defends compensation payments. You've heard this one, I'm sure. President Joe Biden, so he's all over the map now because he's not all there. And I'm not delighting in that. I think I'm just speaking a reality. President Joe Biden furiously defended a plan to send payments to families separated at the southern border Saturday, days after calling a report that the payments were as much as $450,000 garbage. Did you see that clip? He was mad. Fox News' David Spunt asked, "You said last week that this report about migrant families at the border getting payments was garbage," Biden interrupted. "No, I didn't say that. Let's get it straight. You said everybody coming across the border gets $450,000. Biden then was forceful in saying he would try to get payments to those families, criticizing former President Donald Trump's border policy, of course, cages and such, which were built by Obama, but who's paying attention to the details? If, in fact, because of the outrageous behavior of the last administration, you coming across the border, whether it was legal or illegal," raised his voice into a yell, the president continued, "and you lost your child, you lost your child, it's gone. You deserve some kind of compensation, no matter what the circumstance," he said. "What that will be, I have no idea." I mean, why would he? Wow. The Americans, all right, Mr. President, just in case, maybe I should whisper this. The American Civil Liberties Union, which represents the separated families, has identified about 5,500 children separated from parents at the border during the course of the Trump era policy. The total potential payout could cost $1 billion with a B dollars. A billion. Lawsuits alleged that the separated children were housed in poor conditions and sometimes suffered from malnutrition or heat exhaustion or were kept in freezing cold rooms and offered little medical care. Lawyers for the families argued that the children have suffered long-lasting trauma from the anxiety of being without their parents. They seek a range of payouts averaging $3.4 million per family, according to the Wall Street Journal. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis said Tuesday he is very, very concerned about the payments, declaring them to be a slap in the face with Americans themselves already struggling to make ends meet as inflation boosts the cost of living. Thank you, President Biden. I mean, you think about it, Americans are getting more in their gas bills. They're getting more in their grocery bills, DeSantis said during a press conference. You've had all kinds of really bad policies throughout our country that have limited freedom, and you're going to turn around and that you're going to give $475,000 for an individual that came illegally to this country? On Wednesday, Biden denied the report and accused the media of putting out garbage. Remember that? So there you go. Like $3 million per family. If they got split up at the border, parents knowingly violating the sovereign laws of the United States, and by a weak border policy, we bait the hook. We put the cheese on the mousetrap, but they made a decision to come. And then you think it's all going to go smoothly, and then when you get split up with your kids, which is tragic, I'm sorry, but you walked into that situation yourself. You're complicit at the very least. I would put you at the head of the line because you chose to drag your kids in that situation. You chose. I understand you're trying to get a better life for your children. I get that. But you also have to be culpable. There's such a thing as personal responsibility. Now they could get $3 million a family because they were split up at the border? Wow. And you wonder why Joe Biden's approval rating is down to 37.8% approve, 59% disapprove, 64% said he should not run again a second time. I'm like, that's only 64%? God help us. And then you got Kamala, who's at 27.8% approval rating. I've never seen numbers like that. It's just remarkably bad. Then there was the story about the White House backtracking. Remember, did you see this over the weekend? That they were talking about maybe shutting down Line 5 pipeline in Michigan. Then they came out and said, no, 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 no. So, Peter, that's inaccurate. Jean Pierre fired back, the assistant press secretary. This is Peter Ducey, who they have to hate. So he's going after him. Is the administration now considering shutting down the Line 5 pipeline from Canada to Michigan? Listen to this. Listen to her parse her words. Ready? So, Peter, that is inaccurate, she fired back. That is not right. So any reporting indicating that some decision has been made again is not accurate. What's inaccurate, Ducey asked. It's like a four-year-old, right? Why? Why? I love it. They're reporting about us wanting to shut down the Line 5, Jean-Pierre responded. I didn't say wanting, Ducey said. I said it's being studied right now. Is the administration studying the impact of shutting down the Line 5? Yes, we are, Jean-Pierre replied. I thought you were saying that we were going to shut it down, but that's not inaccurate. The Army Corps of Engineers is prepping an environmental impact to look through this. Line 5 is part of a network that moves crude oil and other petroleum products from Western Canada, transporting about 540,000 barrels per day. Petroleum is taken from the pipeline in Escanaba, Michigan. And yeah, let's shut that down because gas prices aren't quite high enough. They're up 50%. And now natural gas for a lot of families in this country? I mean, we notice it. But for a lot of families, strictly in the middle class, lower middle class, and impoverished, and their home heating oil, natural gas prices are going up two times, three times as much. Oh, but let's give $3 million to a family of illegals that unfortunately were separated at the border. This is so upside down. It's just crazy. Then there's this. I thought this was good. Ben Carson. You know Ben Carson, Dr. Ben Carson. America needs a safety net, not a hammock. No kidding. Americans are sympathetic and generous, he writes. They gave more than $470 billion to charity in 2020. That's good. They also spend more than a billion hours every year volunteering. That's awesome. They don't want to support healthy adults and allow them to live off government welfare programs permanently. Americans believe in the safety net, not the safety hammock. Because we've got, do you know how many job openings we have in this country? 10 million job openings. And 8.7 million unemployed people. So we have 2.3 million more job openings than we have unemployed people. So why aren't they taking these jobs, especially McDonald's, Taco Bell, whatever? You can get a we were in a small town like Boone, North Carolina over the weekend. I think at the we were next door to a Taco Bell or a Dunkin' Donuts. I don't remember what it was. It was a $500 signing bonus to get a job where they're going to pay you at least $13 an hour. And so this article from Ben Carson, I'll finish reading it later in the week. It's excellent. But it just points out what's going on in this country, and it's madness, which is why, once again, just a friendly reminder that we need to be in daily prayer for those in authority over us. Do we not? God knows what he's talking about. This is Steve Noble. We'll be back with David Fisher right after this. Oh, angels sent from above. You know you make my world light up. When I was down, when I was hurt, you came to me. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, in lieu of Veterans Day coming up later this week. Jeff Gottsfeld, who's an incredible author, is going to be on tomorrow talking about, he just wrote a children's book. I love this idea. Wrote a children's book about the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. And what happens there is called 21 Steps, and it's going to be a powerful interview. He's going to be on tomorrow. So we're going to spend some time with him. We're working on getting George Barna back on because he has a huge report that came out about millennials. And did you realize about 30% of millennials now, that's basically 18 up to about 40 or so, 30% of them identify as LGBTQ. 30%. So I don't know what's going on in the millennial crowd. That's really heartbreaking. So we'll get George Barna on here as soon as possible. And then my good friend Fred Von Cannon is going to be in. And on Wednesday, he is a businessman, a Christian. He's involved with Prime Barbecue, our favorite barbecue place here in town, and trying to serve the country and serve his community. So we're going to be talking about politics. Fred's been on many times because he ran a year ago. And we're going to talk about some big developments coming up with him on Wednesday. So a lot going on this week, as we're all over the map, as always. But that's the deal. When you have a Christian worldview, it should apply to every nook and cranny of life. So when you say, hey, Steve, what's the show about? I'm always going to tell you it's about pretty much everything, including money and possessions, because that shows up all over the Bible, both the Old and the New Testament, which is why we always go to our friend David Fisher on Mondays. Today with a Money Monday update. David, how are you?
I'm casting my cares upon him today. trying to do that.
Amen. And I think that's a passage of scripture we all need to be reminded of. I know that's where we're starting today. 1 Peter 5:7. Always great to have David Fisher with us. LandmarkGold.com is the website, as always. So 1 Peter 5:7, let's start there, and then we'll go through some of these big items.
So it says, cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, sometimes we just think, okay, well, God took care of those big ones, and I'll take care of the other ones, you know. But there's nothing that's too small for the Lord to cast on his shoulders, and there's nothing too big that we shouldn't cast on his shoulders. So it's not a level of how we humanize this thing. Well, like, okay, that's not so big. Maybe I can handle that. But no, the Lord wants us to cast all our cares upon him because he cares for us. Sometimes I kind of want to challenge myself, make sure I'm doing that.
Yeah, and I think that's one of our challenges, especially here in America. The Protestant work ethic is like, hey, listen, there's a lot of stuff here I need to shoulder myself. I have a can-do attitude. And besides, the Lord doesn't really care about some of my little problems. All that's just patently false. So that's why it says, cast all your anxiety on him. Not just the big, huge things, but all of it. Because the last time I read somewhere that Jesus was talking about that if you follow him, his burden is light. It's not heavy. And he carries the weight for you. So cast all your anxiety on him, which we can all struggle with from time to time. What a great way to start. Well, we talked about this last Monday, looking forward, I guess air quotes on looking forward to what was going to happen last Wednesday with the Federal Reserve. So what went down with those guys and how did it affect the markets?
So they actually finally did follow through with what the projections were, and that's tapering. So they're going to slow down their purchases from $120 billion a month. Between mortgage-backed securities and treasury bills, they're going to lighten that up by about $15 billion, get down to $105. They're still buying debt. That's the key here, though. So, but they are tapering, and tapering is not a good terminology normally for the stock market. I will say it's not taking these big roller coaster swings because Powell has been putting out there for months and months and months. Eventually, they're going to taper. So now that we're here, it's not so surprised, but we haven't really started yet. So that's something, Steve, that we're going to watch what happens each month after the Fed tapers, how much that will react on the market. Because the last time they did this, December of 2018, the market immediately pulled back 10% within 2 days. So the good news is we're not having that aggressive pullback right now.
Yeah, so it seems like this year, just in general, David, is a kind of a holding pattern. You know, gold and silver are down, even though we know that inflation's happening. Inflation's real. The stock market for the last, I'm looking at a one-month thing, you know, it's a steady up push. And that's the bizarre thing in this country. We've talked about this so many different times. And with the worldwide markets, is there seems to be a pretty enormous disconnect between what markets are doing and prices are doing and what's actually happening on the ground with things like inflation or debt. And I really struggle with that. I struggle with it all the time. Pretty much every time we talk, I'm like, where's there any sanity here? I don't know that we can find any.
Sometimes you just can't, you know, and that's kind of what brought me to this scripture. I was looking at the markets the last couple of days, and it doesn't quite make sense. It's almost like the market never wants to pull back, and which, you know, I'm thankful of. But, you know, this puts us in an environment where we're long overdue for a pullback, and now we have every reason to pull back, and it's behaving not so quite so normal.
Yeah, it's so bizarre, but it seems to get worse like that every year. So that's one topic, but what else is going on in the news that could cause some financial challenges as we push towards the end of the year?
Well, we did have some good news. I like to bring some good news. I've not been able to have too much of it, but here's one. We added payrolls. More people came back to work than what the projections were. They thought it would be about 450,000 people getting back to work. It was 531,000, so the number is bigger. That's good news. Here's not, you know, while we're putting people to work, here we're now taking people out of work. President Biden is wanting to shut down another pipeline, this time called Line 5. It runs from Superior, Wisconsin to Sarnia, Ontario. And this would, if shut down, would cost the United States tens of thousands of jobs. This just came. And this is where I don't understand the environment. This came 2 weeks ago, the White House begged OPEC to increase oil production because of supply issues and soaring energy prices. So, yet we've already shut down one major pipeline. Now they're talking about wanting to shut another one down. The world is upside down, in my opinion.
Totally upside down. Well, isn't it amazing? Just 2 years ago, we didn't even have to take a phone call from OPEC. And now President Biden is begging them because they decide to kowtow to the environmental wackos out there and shut all this stuff down, thinking that's politically wise, but it isn't. And it's just crazy that they're doing this as the people that they say they care about. I was just talking about this Pipeline 5 story earlier in the show. The people they say care about, hey, we're for the little guy, we're for the regular folks. Well, their heating costs are going to go up by 200%, maybe 300% this winter. They don't care about them. They care about special interests. I think that's pretty obvious.
Natural gas has gone up 110% in 6 months, so and oil prices obviously have gone up about 40% in the last 3.5 months. So we're here to have higher prices, and we're shutting down our oil production. Doesn't make any sense to me.
Doesn't make any sense to me either. What about the infrastructure bill? So they actually finally passed the first one that was allegedly an infrastructure bill. They had, what, 12 or 13 Republicans cross the aisle to get that done for Nancy Pelosi. So any other things on that? Was that significant from a financial market perspective? And what do you think is going to happen next?
Well, we're referring to the $1.2 trillion one, which is truly infrastructure. It got passed Friday at the very last hour of the 11th hour. But they're throwing this, it's just like, so all this new news, and it keeps changing, Steve.
Yeah.
So I want to make sure I'm reporting accurately. The other bill, they're now saying we're going to have the Congressional Budget Office review it to render their opinion to see if we're outside of the normal spending of what it should pay for itself at $1.85 trillion. They scaled it down for $3.5 trillion down to $1.75. So President Biden and his congressional colleagues say that at 1.875, this will pay for itself. Well, according to the last report, we're about $530 billion overspending in 10 years. So the infrastructure plan is still going to be reviewed by the Congressional Budget Office. The big bill has not been passed. They're adding some more in it. Actually, the big bill is now going to put back about a month worth of our 4 weeks on social spending, so that if you're out sick or you have a relative out sick, you can take that time off. So they're putting things back in the bill. It does change about every day. We'll see if it's supposed to pass by November 15th. It's still a lot of spending by the government, which means higher prices of metals.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So as we mentioned the inflation world earlier. So give us an update on that. What's going? I know we're starting to get nervous. Supply chain problems and inflation in terms of coming up on Christmas season. So inflation, and then as well, like I mentioned, how gold and silver are responding to that so far this year.
Well, inflation is not fully taken its seat, but it's going to get seated the rest of this year and be a part of the fabric of our economic environment next year for sure. I mean, to put into perspective, it's just shy of $12 trillion of spending under Biden his first year. So, I mean, that's 2.5 times more than President Trump. So we're going to have higher prices. The Fed stimulus has gone up $4.5 trillion. The money supply has risen 69% this year. Normally it rises only 5% a year. So we're going to have inflation, and gold is set to steal the show, according to Bloomberg Intelligence. Here's the title of the article: "Gold to steal the show in 2022." Something happened. Gold went up both days after the Fed's big announcement. It should have gone down. It went up 1.3% on Friday, 3% on Thursday, 1.5% on Friday. It's up again today. It has made a change, and it looks like gold is responding to these inflationary numbers better than stocks percentage-wise. I said we would get here, and now it looks like we're here.
Yeah, and that's for Bloomberg to come right out and say gold's going to steal the show. That's because, you know, all the people that are in the know stuff's coming. But most of us aren't paying attention to that, and we can't pay attention to the news. We have to dig. We have to get educated. How can people get more information, David?
A simple way: by calling our company and get those questions. Answers to your questions, 866, that's your phone number, 844-604-2575, 844-604-2575, or landmarkgold.com.
God bless you, buddy. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you again soon. And everybody, like I said, I'll be back.
Another program powered by the Truth Network.